Good morning, everyone. Pursuant to House Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Preventing Homelessness Division to order. The committee legislative assistant will take the roll to determine which members are present.
Chair Gomez.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
Keeler, present.
New Brindley.
Present.
Davids.
Davids, present.
Heinrich.
Present.
Collins. Hornstein.
Present.
Howard.
Present.
Cagle.
Present.
Petersburg.
Present.
And Ryer.
Present.
And that is a quorum.
Thank you, Mr. Petrie. May I have a motion to approve the minutes for February 3rd, 2021?
Petersburg so moves.
Representative Petersburg moves approval of the minutes for February 3rd, 2021. Is there any discussion on this motion? Hearing none, if we could unmute and those members in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for February 3rd, 2021 are approved. So thank you everybody for being here this morning. We have two bills. First up is House File 294. HF 294 was referred to this division by the chair of the full committee, Representative Schultz, and Representative Neuer will be presenting today. I will move that House File 294 be referred back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Representative Neuer, are you ready to tell us about your bill?
Yes, Madam Chair. Thank you so much for having me and for moving the bill. My name is State Representative Mahmoud Neuer. I represent District 60B in Minneapolis. Madam Chair, members, imagine feeling unwelcome and unsafe in your own home. Imagine you have nowhere to go. That is the experience of many runaway and homeless youths that I've encountered sleeping at the parks in Minneapolis. As we are facing the COVID-19 pandemic, imagine that youth who do not have access to go to school, not having a safe space to learn with internet and a computer. Imagine your child who's left out with nothing. In fact, more than 9,000 Minnesota students were identified as homeless at the start of 2019-2020 school year, according to the data from Minnesota Department of Education, and more than two-thirds are BIPOC, that is Black, Indigenous, and people of color students. We also know that homeless youth experience substance abuse disorder, a significant mental health, chronic physical health and issues, as well as sexual exploitation. Madam Chair and members, this bill requires the Commission of Human Services to update a 2007, yet we are here now in 2021, to update the legislative report on runaway and homeless youth using existing data, studies, analysis provided by state, county, and other entities. It requires the report to include three key elements where significant learning has occurred since 2007. Madam Chair and members, it lists other data that must be included in the report. And it requires the Department of Human Services Commissioner to provide us with that report by December 15, 2021. Madam Chair, I do have some testifiers who have signed up. I also have the Department of Human Services with us to help us and guide us with any questions that we may have. Thank you for allowing me to present this bill.
Thank you so much, Representative Neuer. I see there's a hand up. We're gonna get through the testifiers and then we will go to member discussion and questions. So if we could have Karen Peterson go first for the testifiers. Ms. Peterson.
Good morning. Can you hear me?
I can. Please welcome to the committee. Thanks for being here. Please identify yourself for the record and then proceed with your testimony.
My name is Karen Peterson. I am the president of the Sheridan Neighborhood Organization in Northeast Minneapolis. I live at 215 Broadway Street, Northeast. And I'm just calling to testify in strong support of this bill. For far too long, we have neglected this population, that when we develop programs, they are designed for adults. And our youth have very specific needs that are not being met. They are not safe in shelters. They do not feel safe in shelters, and they won't go to shelters. So they will be exploited on the streets. And we know from studies that there are long-term health impacts, that if we don't try to help them now, this will be a lifetime. We're looking at a lifetime of chronic problems. So I commend Representative Knorr for bringing this forward and for mentioning the MDE study, because the Minneapolis Department of Education study is a powerful point. It doesn't capture everyone. We think it's 2 to 3 times, many more. I also would really encourage you to include Youth Build. It is a wonderful program that teaches youth hands-on career building skills in the construction trades as they're building homes for homeless or rehabbing some of our older houses to house low-income residents. So I am in strong support, and I encourage you to keep up with this work. Thank you very much. That's it.
Thank you very much for your testimony, Ms. Peterson. Are there any other folks on the call who would like to testify on this House File 294?
Yes. Yes.
Hi, please introduce yourself for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you for being here.
Good morning. My name is Joe Nathan. I'm director of the Center for School Change, and I'm coordinator of a metropolitan-wide group called United for Action. We strongly recommend and commend this legislation to the committee and to the Minnesota legislature. We think this is neither a Democratic nor a Republican issue. It's a Minnesota issue. I strongly agree with and support the comments that Karen Peterson has just made, and I'll just add a few others. One of the things that we need to do, it seems to me, in order to make progress in this issue is to have a variety of points of view and a variety of research being used. And so I commend strongly the effort here to bring together a variety of resources, including the resources already in place, and that is the gathering of information from every district and charter public school. And Representative Knorr and I have discussed this. This is already being gathered. And as Ms. Peterson said, it's only one day and one time, but it shows that there are literally more than 9,000 youngsters on one day and one time. And we think the actual number is double or triple. So we need to know the numbers, but equally important, we need to take constructive, effective, cost-effective action. And that's why many of us are so excited about Youth Build. As Ms. Peterson said, and as Representative Knorr has said, he'd like to have more information about this. This is a program which simultaneously helps youngsters who have not necessarily been successful in high school to learn construction skills, which we know are very, very valuable and very marketable as they rehab apartments for people who are homeless, or as they construct homes. We also know, and I've mentioned this briefly to you before, Madam Chair and members of the committee, so I'll just say it very briefly, that we have examples around the state of youngsters who are literally building homes as a part of their coursework. It's a win-win-win proposition. So I think that this bill is strongly worth supporting, not only because it gathers information about what the problem is, but it identifies specific actions that the legislature and foundations and others could take to deal with these problems. So thank you for listening, and thank you for considering this bill.
Thank you so much, Mr. Nathan. And thanks to you and Ms. Peterson for bringing up Youth Build. I know that there's a program that operates, it's not in my district, it's in Representative Hassan's district at Little Earth of United Tribes. And when I worked for the city, I had the opportunity to visit with some of the youth who were participating in the program kind of over the course of a few years. And it was really remarkable, just both like the kind of, just like agency and pride that you saw in the young people who were doing the work, and also like, you know, the awareness of like that they were using their time and energy and building skills, but also like giving back to the community that they cared about. It's really, really powerful model. So I thank you for bringing that up. Is there anybody else who's present in the committee who'd like to offer testimony on this bill? All right, seeing none, I just wanted to note that there's somebody on hand from the Department of Human Services. If any members have questions that they'd like to direct to them. But first, I'm gonna go, I have a few people in queue. I'm gonna go to Representative Davids first.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I don't have a question for the author or the testifiers, but when the clerk or the legislative assistant calls a roll, he repeats that he got our roll call. For example, you say Davids, and I say Davids present, and he needs to say Davids present. We don't know if he's getting us or not. Please, if you will.
Thank you so much for that. We'll implement that moving forward. I think that makes sense.
Like the chief clerk does when he takes the roll, he says, you know, Gomez, Minneapolis type of thing. So we know that we're in.
Yeah, it's always hard for us to know if anybody's hearing us when we're speaking into the void. So thank you for pointing that out, Rep. Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Next in the queue is Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Knorr. I think that I appreciate this. My feeling is this is exactly what we need to be doing. We need to be digging in further on this stuff. So I appreciate the bill. I guess I would be curious to know if the representative from Human Services has any information on the original study in 2007. And are there good jumping off points in there? And then for Representative Knorr, a question for you as well. Are we currently aware of organizations or programs who have shown some good success in either ending youth homelessness or better yet, preventing it? Clearly, I would assume that when it comes to youth homelessness, there are significant issues in the homes of these youth as well. And so I'm wondering if we have success stories to look at on an organizational level, at a system level, that, and perhaps they're already included in your list. I looked through the bill language and clearly there's an extensive list that's very specific. But are any of those, like I said, is there any like shining examples of success in all of this?
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Should we go to Ms. Sommerfeld first and then to the author of the bill for some comments in response to Representative New Brindley's questions?
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jennifer Sommerfeld with DHS, and I'm actually going to turn this question over to Andrea Simonette, who works in our Office of Economic Opportunity.
Good morning. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am Andrea Simonette, and I work at the Department of Human Services Office of Economic Opportunity, and I can say about the initial report in 2007 that was intended to be an initial analysis of that initial investment in the Runaway and Homeless Youth Act, now known as the Homeless Youth Act. And so there are findings in there about the use of the funds, the effectiveness of the funds, the needs of the population. Subsequently, we have done biennial reports. Every 2 years, we do the HIA legislative report. We're working on one right now for this year. So the last one would have been in 2019 that could be made available. And those reports outline the needs of the population, the distribution of the Homeless Youth Act funds, some of the outcomes. So we can certainly get you copies of the initial report in 2007 and then the subsequent reports after that so you can see kind of what's in there and what the findings were.
Madam Chair.
Did you want to go to Representative Knorr for any comments about that? Because I don't think that Ms. Simonette kind of commented on your question about those sort of standout programs that are really doing
actually,
well.
Can I ask a follow-up first?
Sure, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. That's it. So really the 2007 Act, it sounds like is more of a report on that current program and those metrics. So is the language in this bill, is this much more expansive in studying the issue more broadly? Will this be a much more broad study than what you've done in the past?
That is my understanding. Yes, it would be broader on the issues of homelessness and not specific to the funding stream.
Representative New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Ms. Simonette. That's really helpful. And I think Representative Knorr, again, I appreciate that. I think that's what we need. We need to dig further into this stuff. And so then again, I would repeat that question to Representative Knorr, or if there are other testifiers on the call who would know, that was very specific to the Homeless Youth Act and how those funds are spent. Are we aware of good examples then of where we have seen success on this front?
Representative Knorr, if you wanted to comment or pass it to any testifier or other expert that's on the line.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I just wanted to start opening on the issue that we know there are few entities, for example, the Youth Link, that provides youth with help, not only about being a homeless, but also connecting them with resources and help. All those things are included in the work that they do. That's why we're requesting this data to understand what is the real cause for youth homelessness. What can we do collectively? What are the barriers that the youth are experiencing? And quite frankly, we also need to look into the making sure that we do have enough housing for the homeless youth with services and quality education so that they can succeed in their life. So this is just one example. I'll let the department give us a little bit about the program that they run, because they're working with many institutions and organizations.
Did anyone else have a comment or response to Representative New Brindley's question about programs or organizations that are particularly doing a great job in this area?
Madam Chair, I can respond to that. So the current report that we do, we outline the agencies, all the providers who do receive the Homeless Youth Act funding currently. We give information about the outcomes that those agencies report to us semi-annually. And we also give kind of a background of the needs of the population using data that's out there primarily from Wilder Research, but also some of the other data. So that information is currently in the biennial report that we give. We don't go into individual agencies. It's more of a higher level aggregate of all of the agencies funded with the Homeless Youth Act funds. But it is specific to those funds. The needs outlined in that report are from larger national reports on youth homelessness and statewide reports on youth homelessness. So that is in the report right now.
Thank you. And I think that Mr. Nathan, if you had a comment or a response that you wanted to contribute, please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Going to the questions that was asked about both the prevention of homelessness, youth homelessness, and effective ways of dealing with it. The question is extremely important, and I won't take your time to go through in detail, but briefly, first, as the representative said, we need to do everything that we can to prevent homelessness. And there are districts and social service agencies all over the state working very effectively to prevent situation. That's obviously a very important thing to do whenever possible. And there are districts and charters and agencies working together collaboratively around the state. One of the things that we need to do is to help more young people see how they can make a positive difference in the world. And that's, of course, one of the values of young people constructing homes or fixing up apartments. So the youth, there are examples of places around the state that are doing a terrific job of preventing this. Secondly, in terms of dealing effectively with it, as Representative Knorr said, so I'll just say this, reiterate briefly, it is not simply a matter of providing housing. There needs to be supportive housing and services. And literally 5 minutes from the Capitol, there's a wonderful example, the I'm Die Young facility on University Avenue. And I realize under the pandemic, it's difficult to visit places, but this is an example of a facility that not only provides housing for youngsters of various races and various races and ethnicities, predominantly but not exclusively American Indian, but it also provides very supportive services. And they have a very strong record of helping young people to transition from homelessness, not only to finding a home, but to finding jobs and to finding training. And that's, of course, what we want. So it's not just a matter of preventing, it's also housing, but it's also supportive services. So thank you very much.
Thank you for that comment. Excuse me. Representative New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for those comments. I really appreciate that. I'm not familiar with all of the organizations listed in the bill. My hope, and perhaps this is accounted for in the language, but sometimes when we're really prescriptive in the language, we actually limit ourselves. And so my hope is that as we move forward with this study, that that we're not self-selecting organizations that will confirm our own biases, but that we will really study and dig in and figure out where are the holes, what is working well, so that we can amplify what's working well and we can fill those holes. And so I don't, like I said, I'm not familiar enough with all of the organizations listed to know if it really will catch all of that stuff. But I just would encourage you, Representative Knorr, to think about that moving forward, to make sure that as this bill moves, that we do think about those things. And again, I really appreciate the approach in bringing this forward.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Vice Chair Keeler, did you have a question, comment?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And thank you, Rep. Knorr, for bringing this bill. I think that the more that we look at data, it tells us the accurate story of the work that we need to do. I would really like to ask Mr. Nathan a question. I know that you mentioned it in a past committee and then you brought it up again today. And it's something that I've actually had a concern about as well. It's the fact that when we do the point in time study, we're only looking at kids on one day and we're using that data to help us decide what we're gonna do year round. So you've mentioned a couple times that we maybe need to expand that. What are some different suggestions that you have or timeframes that maybe we need to look at implementing a second or third date and time study?
Madam Chair.
Mr. Nathan.
Representative, thank you. As your colleague from North Branch may know, I write a column for a number of suburban and rural Minnesota newspapers around the state. And I've written several columns on this issue. One of the things that I did was to ask local districts two questions, charters and districts, two questions, including North Branch, by the way, and Minneapolis and others. I asked them, first of all, what was the number that they reported to the State Department of Education one day, how many young people were homeless? And then the second, and I think equally important question, was how many young people who were homeless did they serve during the entire year? And so that was just two quick questions that gave us between double and triple the number of youngsters who were reported homelessness on a single day. So if whoever is in charge of the study simply asks the school districts not only how many young people were homeless on that particular day, which is what the state report now calls for, but also asks a second question, approximately how many young people did you serve during the entire year, you'll have the full picture. I hope that that's helpful.
Vice Chair Keeler?
That is helpful, and I agree with you. I think that we actually need to change the way that we document our students when they identify with us. Also, and we know that our homeless population moves. And so if a school district identifies and is providing supports and they move from my district to your district, that we have some sort of safety net set up so our youth aren't falling through the cracks. So I appreciate the work that you do on that. I really appreciate this bill because, like I said, we have to look at the data. I hope that we do a little bit of data desegregation in it as well and really break down the populations more than just the general, you know, couple that we always name. To come to mind, I think it's good to break down our indigenous population, especially by our sovereign nations, because I think we can always use that data to go back and look at organizations and supports that we need to provide help across this entire state. So I am firmly in favor of this, and I appreciate you bringing it forward. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Keeler. And I guess I just wanted to make a kind of, we have a couple minutes, so I wanted to make a comment or kind of a question, but you know, Representative Fisher, who works in youth homelessness, and I met with him the other night, and, you know, we know that LGBTQ youth are way overrepresented in the homeless and unstably housed population. And so to Representative New Brindley's point, I guess you know, I wanted to lift up the fact that, you know, having, this is sort of like, you know, kind of personal experience over my kind of life, seeing people that I knew when I was a young person, you know, kind of go through this process with their families when they were coming out as LGBTQ and they were young people, just that having support that's specific to LGBTQ youth who are experiencing homelessness is incredibly important. The issues sometimes that they're facing are, you know, there's a certain commonality to them, and that it can, you know, I think whenever you're going through something that's really difficult, it can be helpful to, you know, to find other people who are going through the same thing. And you know, just to say that, like, I think all along, right, when we talk about Andae Young in sort of Representative Keeler's questions about disaggregating data in a really fine way, when you talk about having programming that's specifically geared toward LGBTQ youth, it's like there is this sort of specificity that sometimes is really helpful in some of these programs. So I just wanted to say that. I don't know if DHS could share, you know, Representative Fisher said that he works at Face to Face. He said that he thought up to a third of LG or of young people experiencing homelessness were LGBTQ. And I don't know if anybody on the call could give a little context to that or let me know if that's true or not. I don't know if that's for Ms. Sommerfeld or Ms. Simonette, if you have info about that.
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. We know from the most recent Wilder study that was done in 2018 that 22% of young adults 18 to 24 identified as LGBTQ, and we know that that's likely an underestimate. So, so there are estimates that are much higher than that, but we know just from that most recent report that 22% self-identified as LGBTQ.
Thank you very much for that. I also know Representative Fisher is on the call because he's presenting a bill next. So if he wanted to offer a comment here, that would be great. Otherwise, we can, you know, proceed with the vote. But I wanted to give that opportunity if he wants.
Thank you, Chair Gomez, for the opportunity. Yes, this is something that when you mentioned that it is underreported because there are many people at that age who are struggling and they are coming out of communities also where there's a heavy stigma around the LGBTQ community. And as a result, they're afraid to identify. So the fact that 22% have the courage to self-identify at that age shows that the actual numbers are much higher than what is being reported.
Thank you so much for that context, Representative Fisher. I appreciate it. Members, any further discussion? I don't see any hands, but it might be somebody that I'm not seeing. If not, Representative Noor, do you have any closing comments you'd like to leave the committee with?
I did want to flag, I did see two hands go up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
I believe Ms. Peterson and Representative Hornstein.
Oh, okay. So let's go to Ms. Peterson first and then to Rep. Hornstein.
Thank you, Chair and Committee. I just wanted to mention one program that I've heard of recently that's touching on a long neglected population, and it's Paris Housing, P-E-R-I-S. And they are building a new building, actually, in Lowry Hill East. And this is designed to house kids aging out of foster care. So kids that probably didn't get a lot of the support to teach them how to function in the world. So there'll be units in there where it's be affordable to their, based on their income, whatever, and they will be getting the support services on site that they need. And it's a new program, so I can't speak to the success, but I can speak to the need. And I just wanted to put it out there. New ideas are coming up and I'm really supportive of it. Thank you.
Thank you so much for bringing that program up, Ms. Peterson. You know, the rates of homelessness among youth that are aging out of foster care are really, really stunning. You know, I think it's really important. I know that the Graves Foundation, which is located in my district, was like a big kind of driving force behind that effort. And they're trying to lift up the issue of homelessness among young people aging out of foster care. And so it's really great to see that project moving forward, and hopefully we'll see other efforts in that area. So appreciate that. Representative Hornstein?
Well, Thank you, Madam Chair. I mean, we are totally tracking, Madam Chair, with you and Ms. Peterson, because I was going to mention that facility. It is in the district I represent, and I wanted to make the point that it really was a partnership between a number of public entities. You know, the city helped finance that. You mentioned the Groves, the Graves Foundation, Madam Chair, and, you know, there was, a lot of, you know, effort put into that, and that's very exciting and very innovative, and I think should be replicated. And I also wanted to mention around the corner from there, just a couple blocks from there, is the Bridge for Runaway Youth, which is also in the area I represent. Another example of just combining services with shelter, and really, really helpful, and particularly the LGBTQ community, Madam Chair, that you mentioned. And then another facility, The Link on the north side, we had an opportunity to tour before COVID hit, both The Link and The Bridge as part of the, I believe, the housing community. I don't remember who organized that, but it was a really, really effective tour. And I would encourage, you know, Madam Chair, you know, when it's safe to do so, that we actually look at some of these facilities, because I think really seeing it in a hands-on way and really looking at the wraparound services they provide and meeting the people directly who are in who are being sheltered there and serviced there, I think is a very powerful and meaningful experience. So I wanted to just raise up those three examples and also to thank Representative Neuer. I think this is a really, really, really important study, and I'm so glad you're carrying this legislation. I strongly support it.
Thank you so much for that, Representative Hornstein. I think that I hope that our committee can do field trips in the future, because I think there's just a lot of good work, and that, you know, we can hear about something in committee, but seeing it ourselves is really kind of a different experience. And as we've been talking about, you know, that part of our charge here in this committee is to to get more closely connected to this issue, to understand the issues facing folks who are experiencing homelessness. And the best way to do that is kind of in person. So I think we're all holding out for that. So are there any other comments before or questions before we go to Representative Neuer for close? Sean apparently was seeing hands. I wasn't, so.
I believe Mr. Nathan is raising his hand.
Okay, Mr. Nathan, please go ahead.
Madam Chair and members, I'll just say this 30 seconds while we're talking. I just wanted to illustrate that this is a statewide issue. While we were talking, I've been just looking at the Minnesota Education Report Card. The Cambridge-Isanti School District reports 29 homeless youth. Forest Lake reports homeless youth. Rush City reports homeless youth, and so on throughout the state. So I strongly commend you for looking at this and just urge recognition. This is a statewide issue. And frankly, we have wonderful examples all over the state, but I wanted to emphasize that this is not just Minneapolis, St. Paul, Duluth. This is statewide. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Mr. Nathan. I think we talked about a lot of examples that were in the metro, but it also speaks to, you know, to the need to expand some of these more specific services across the state, and, you know, to recognize that this issue is impacting every community in our state. So I appreciate that. Representative Neuer, did you have any closing comments you wanted to share with the committee?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, members. I think this is a very important issue for us to look into. I have heard from many members that we need to be looking into how this program can become more targeted with more clear data, disaggregated data, and also being more culturally appropriate. We also need to look into the impact of homelessness on LGBTQ youth. So that is something that we have always known, and we want to make sure that we do have clear documentation of that. And if you look at the NCSL report, Voices of Youth Count, it really breaks down some of the challenges that the homeless youth are facing. So I would like the committee to look into that, and also to look into the McKinley-Vento Act, which really helps youth in schools. And we want to make sure that we capture that data and to be able to understand the struggles that the youth are experiencing with education, and making sure that we can provide them with pathways to gain skills and technical skills and whatever we can do to combine not only housing, but also with services so they can thrive in their lives. So thank you so much, Madam Chair.
Thank you so much, Representative Neuer, for your important work on this issue and bringing it in front of our committee. Hearing no further discussion, I would like to renew my motion that House File 294 be referred back to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. The committee legislative assistant will take the role. And Mr. Petrie, if you could do as Representative Davids requested and call back the member's name and their vote as you hear it, that would be really helpful. Thanks so much.
Gomez.
Gomez, aye.
Gomez, aye. Keeler.
Keeler, aye.
Keeler, aye. New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Davids.
Davids, aye.
Davids, aye. Heinrich.
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Hollins.
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Cahill.
Aye.
Cahill, aye. Petersburg.
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. That is 11 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and House File 294 is on its way back to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you so much, Representative Moore. Next, we have House File 162. This bill, too, was referred to this division by the chair of the full committee, Representative Schultz. And I would like to move that House File 162 be referred back to the Human Services, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Fisher, could you please present your bill to the committee?
Thank you, Representative Gomez. Committee, I appreciate the opportunity to present House File 162. This is a bill that will allow a process for youth who are experiencing homelessness to have an easier way to be able to get needed IEDs at no cost so that they can continue on with their lives. Some background on this is I've worked in the homeless youth world. As you heard earlier, I'm currently at face-to-face health and counseling in St. Paul, been there for the last year and a half. Before that, I spent 13 years working at Avenues for Youth in North Minneapolis. And so when you're in small nonprofits, you do a lot of connections and work across the agency. And one of the things that I noticed is that many times when working with our youth, that it was a challenge for them to get their IDs, which prevent them from getting schooling, prevent them from getting jobs, et cetera. And so it's always been in the back of my mind, how do we better address this issue? Well, lo and behold, last year, the Department of Human Services came out with a letter from January 2020 last year that addressed this whole problem, where they'd gotten together with the Department of Public Safety to take a look at what could be done to help make it easier for youth who are out there to be able to access the needed documents that they need to try to be successful in life. And so the bill that we have in front of us is basically taking the recommendations that they had come out with and putting them into statute. And so what I'll do is kind of walk through a little bit what the problem was, what some of the things that were identified and kind of where they line up on the bill here. So by walking through that, I think that'll give you some context of where we're coming from, what some of the issues are and where they're addressed in the bill. First of all, I want to say that while there are research estimates that on any given night, we've got over 6,000 youth who are homeless in the state of Minnesota. And when you take a look at those, about 2,500 are estimated to be under the age of 17, and about 3,500 are estimated between the ages of 18 and 24. This is also complicated by the fact that 73% of the youth out there are people of color. And so as a result, it disproportionately impacts people who are of color out there. More than half of them have been homeless for over a year. I can tell you from my experience, it's not been unusual. We've seen 16 or 17 year olds who've been homeless for 3 or 4 years already by that point in time. So these are youth who, because of that, they've experienced a lot of violence, they've abused, neglect, mental illness. It's not unusual that a number of them have children of their own. Up to a third may have that. 57% may suffer mental health issues. And to ensure that youth survive out there and be able to thrive and achieve their best potential, it is incumbent for us to have policies that will put things in place for them to do that. And one of those critical things is making sure they have access to identification. It is very hard to really access services out there if you don't have it. It's hard. You cannot get a job. You cannot get bank accounts. You're not able to sometimes get prescriptions out there, packages. Sometimes you can't get into public facilities without having an ID. And, you know, sometimes there's things from accessing public assistance. So, you know, think of it, you're a 17-year-old youth who's been on the street for 3 to 4 years, and you're trying to survive and trying to access your medical or getting some basic benefits. If you don't have an ID, it takes sometimes six, you know, my experience has been sometimes 6 to 12 months before you can get your services. And part of it is because of the way the system is set up. So it's important that we come together and figure out how do we do this. And so the Department of Public Safety and the Department of Health have taken a look at a number of things and saying there are things that can be done to make that occur. And one of the issues that had first come out there is that, you know, if you're a children, if you're under 16 or younger, you're not able to apply to get an ID yourself or to get a certificate of birth. And so that's one of the things that were highlighted. And that's what's happening on pages 1 and 2 of the bill, is making sure that for youth who are homeless and they fit the definition of homelessness, is they're then able to go ahead and apply with certain requirements to be able to get that birth certificate. Because without that birth certificate, everything else stops in the process. And so that's the person that has to be identified. One of the things that comes into that is then, as we're dealing with it, is how do you address the issues of what they should have on a card? What are the things to, you know, in terms of height and all these kind of things from the public safety side? And that's what pages 5 and 6 of the bill really do, is they spend a lot of time dealing with what is required in there, making sure that you've got the ID out there for the people, is when they have the certificate, is a way for that to be notarized so that people can verify who you are in the process and who is able to verify that. And then also when they get their ID, is that they still have to have their photo on there, they still have to have their age, they have to have their weight. Those kind of things are also incorporated. These are on pages 4, 5, and 6 as we're going into it. One of the things that is also identified as a concern that people have had is how do you make sure that people don't use it for fraud, et cetera. And one of the things that they're taking a look at is these certificates would be of ID that would be put out there would have a statute of limitations for 6 months, and then you would have to get it renewed. Although that's still a little bit of a barrier out there, it helps address the fraud issue that can sometimes come up. And the nice thing is that this article is written in such way is that if you've already had a certificate the first time around that was issued, you can reuse that certificate, even though it's expiring. It's like your driver's license. Your driver's license expires, you can take that driver's license and get it renewed. And that same provision is allowed for their certificates here for identifying a person's identification for those who are homeless. So in a very quick summary, that is what the bill is trying to do, is make sure that it's easier. There's also provision in here at the very end for dollars to be allocated so that we can get this carried out, because there is some programming things that have to be done in the software. And that would be something that's more of the finance issue that will be handled up in the finance committee when this bill returns there. And so I will pause at this point and stand for questions.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. So we have a couple of folks with their hands up. We're going to hear from testifiers, and then we'll go to discussion and questions. Ms. Peterson, I believe that you wanted to testify on this bill as well.
Yes, thank you very much, Madam Chair and Committee.
If you could just make sure to identify yourself again for the record, even though you've already been here, just so we
okay.
And proceed with your testimony.
Yes, my name is Karen Peterson. I am the president of the Sheridan Neighborhood Organization in Northeast Minneapolis. I live at 215 Broadway Street, Northeast. And I can't imagine that there'd be much I could add to that wonderful introduction by Representative Fisher. It just boggles my mind that we make things so hard on a population that is already so challenged. So anything we can do to remove barriers, to lift up a population, give them a chance to get out of the hole, because I've just seen far too much damage. I met someone in Sheridan's recent tent encampment who said he's been homeless since he was 14. So once you start, if you don't get lifted up, if someone doesn't help you somehow, the chances are, and this guy's well into his 40s, the chances are that you you're headed down a really hard, painful path. And I grew up in the neighborhood of the bridge when it was first starting out. So I saw some of the success stories from the bridge, some of the kids I went to high school from the bridge. So we can make a difference. We just have to commit to doing so. So I salute you for taking this cause up. Thank you, Representative Fisher, for bringing it forward and pointing out such excellent points. And that's really all I had to say, is that we really need to start removing barriers and lifting up these kids, because I'm really tired of the tent encampments, and it's just so painful. So anything we can do, we must. So I thank you for your time. I really appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Peterson. Was there anybody else from the public who wished to testify on this bill? President, I'm going to lean on Sean to tell me if there's hands I don't see again.
I'm not seeing any right now.
Okay, great. In that case, we're going to move on to member discussion at this time. Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Fisher. I do have just a couple of questions on the bill itself. And I actually, one of them was on the expiration date of the birth certificates. And you went into that a little bit, but I'm wondering if you can maybe go into a little bit more the concerns of fraud. Honestly, you brought that up and I went, oh, I hadn't even thought about that aspect of it. You know, is there the possibility with this that a birth certificate will be obtained and shared? Is that the concern when it comes to that fraud piece?
In terms of the fraud piece, with what I picked up in the information that was put out there, and this was from the letter back in January, it was making sure that it was from the security risk type of thing, is to protect against fraud, vital records, et cetera, is there's already a monitoring process that the department has in place for how many certificates have been issued, you know, tracking that kind of thing to make sure that you don't have somebody who might be trying to do something that is not acceptable out there. And so the reason they were saying is that is always a possibility the check is being put in is making sure that these would expire and be exchanged for other birth certificates that would minimize the security risk along those lines. So that's how that would work along those types of lines. Does that get to your question?
Yeah, it does. I appreciate that, Madam Chair. I can just keep going.
Sorry, is there anything else, Representative, or
yes. Can we move on? Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes. I appreciate that. And I guess, is the concern there, is there still concern? Clearly, this works to minimize that, and I appreciate that. So would there still be concern that, let's say, somebody, someone gets a birth certificate, the six-month birth certificate, and... I mean, could they sell that? I mean, is that the idea here, that when you talk about the security issues, that they would sell it or lend it to a friend? Or I'm just trying to wrap my head around that a little bit.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative New Brindley. I am not sure if it was coming from that aspect. I can say that the frustration that I've seen over the years is that the youth, you know, this is a frustrating thing sometimes when we're working with youth who are homeless, is we had found that somebody else had taken their social security number and used that for obtaining credit. And so as a result, we'd have youth that we're working with and all of a sudden who have been homeless, who'd never applied for credit, they were trying to clean up their credit reports because somebody else had gotten access to their social security numbers through other through other forms and whatnot, and had taken advantage of that. And so those are some of the kind of things, is you've got some people out there who are doing this for financial gain is what they're doing. And so, you know, we want to make sure that we're keeping things and I'm speculating a little bit as where the why the department came up with that, because I was just picking it up out of their report saying, here's what the concerns, you know, here's what could be a possibility, here's what we want to do to make sure we're minimizing it.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative New Brindley. Anything
thank else? You, Madam Chair. And thank you, Representative Fisher, for that. I appreciate that explanation. It helps to know also that it came from the department. With both the birth certificate and the ID, since this clearly will not be a traditional birth certificate with the expiration date, does that add additional cost? And is the department ready for that? And same with this non-compliant ID. Is there a reason that we're not just issuing a traditional state ID to these folks rather than this new non-compliant ID? My assumption is that that will add cost as well.
Representative Fisher.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Representative New Bridley. In terms of the cost, that would be up to the department to be able to answer that. I did not ask specific as how all the cost estimates, I've not seen a fiscal note on it, what ties into that. I've been more focused at this level on the policy side than on the fiscal side, which will be at the next level. I will say that as we're taking a look at it, those are things that I know that there's an appropriation amount. I'm speculating that is part of the reason, but that is something that I would have to defer to somebody else who's got more experience, who's got more knowledge. And I don't know if anyone from the department might be able to answer that a little bit more clearly than I can.
Thank you, Representative Fisher. I know that we don't have DPS on the line and that they do the actual issuance of IDs, but I don't know if someone from the Department of Human Services has any thoughts about that they wanted to contribute.
Chair Gomez?
Yes, please.
Jennifer Sommerfeld from the Department of Human Services. I just wanted to say that no, we don't. This would actually be a department question for public safety, but we will make sure we reach out to them on this issue.
Thank you. I know that we have the transportation chair in our committee. We're lucky to have him here. I don't know if you had any thoughts, yeah. Representative Hornsby.
Thank you, Chair Gomez. This was going through my mind as Representative Fisher presented the bill, and I looked at the language, and it seems to suggest birth records may not be, I think we're talking, Madam Chair, can I ask the author a question?
Absolutely, please.
Madam Chair and Representative Fisher, I think we're talking about birth records, correct? I don't believe that that's under the purview of DPS. It's probably under the
right.
The hospital or yeah. other
vital records
facility. So I guess that would be the difference here. Normally, with driver's licenses and just general IDs, that is correct, Madam Chair, that we would be looking at the Department of Public Safety. So I just wanted to, if the author could clarify that, that might help sort this out.
Representative Fisher?
Thank you for the question. And from what I'm reading through and my understanding is that in terms of the card, it's the ID card itself. So that would be the one that would be expiring and have to be replaced.
Oh.
Representative New Brindley?
Thank you, Madam Chair. The bill language says that the birth certificate will expire every 6 months. So that for sure is expiring every 6 months. I guess I'd have to look back at the language and, in this digital world, there's lots of flipping back and forth, but I'd have to look back at the language on the ID card. But the second part of that question, and I appreciate your response on the cost, and I assume that a fiscal note has been requested on this bill and that that'll be addressed moving forward. But the second part of that question was, with this birth certificate, why are we doing this non-compliant ID card as opposed to a traditional state-issued identification card?
Representative Fisher?
In terms of the, I'm just making sure I'm not on mute. I'm unmuted here. Thank you.
We can hear you.
Thank you, Chair. Thank you, Chair Gomez, Representative New Brindley. As they were going through part of it, and this is as I was reading through the letter on it that was put out, is that they were trying to separate out because you've got the real compliant ID that is out there, and they were making sure that what we were doing is that we were making sure that this was not being part of the real ID compliant ones, because on the real compliant ID ones, these are the standards that are set by the federal government, And so they wanted to make very clear that this was not something that would be able to comply with the real ID issues out there. And so that was being specifically called out to make sure that we understood that this was not going to be at that level, and therefore it could not be used in the same ways that you would use the real ID for. So example is eventually you need a real ID card to be able to travel on a plane. This ID card, while it would help them get a job, be able to get a bank account, would not allow them to be able to travel on a plane. And that's because of the federal requirements that are out there for a real ID. So it was being called out in that way because to put those extra challenges out there that are required by the federal government puts additional barriers out there that youth would have a very, very difficult time trying to overcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative New Brindley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Fisher. I appreciate that explanation. So it sounds like this is a traditional state-issued ID card. It is just not real ID compliant. I wonder if moving forward, if that could be clarified in the language. I'm generally favorable of this. I certainly see the need for this. It also seems like maybe there's some clarification and work that should be done moving forward. And I'll make sure that I flag those things for my colleagues as this moves forward. But I'm happy to support this bill today. So thank you, Representative Fisher.
Thank you so much, Representative New Brindley. Next is Representative Petersburg.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this one is just kind of clarifying for me because I don't want to make assumptions based upon improper information. But it sounds like the target audience or clientele that this is dealing with is youth that are not only homeless, but are alone without family intervention or family support. And so when we talk about even younger kids, I'm assuming that there is some sort of involvement with child services, et cetera. Am I correct in that if children are homeless and they're under a certain age that they fall underneath the responsibility of some sort of child services program, and that this really is targeting for those that can be independent, but maybe not yet of legal age. Is this the targeting?
Representative Fisher or Ms. Simonette, I don't know.
Madam Chair, Representative Petersburg, what you're hitting on is something that is very interesting out in what I see in the real world and how things happen. Many times you have youth who are very young who are not connected with any government services or agencies at all. And at a certain point, I know that with the nonprofit organizations that are out there is that they start connecting with them through outreach programs. So for a youth to eventually be able to get their ID through here, usually means that they're connecting with one of these government, if it's not a government program, it's usually a nonprofit who is working with them. And I have seen youth who have come through who have been under, who have been in the system under 16, and they're not connected with child protection or anything like that. They're just out there. And that's one of the problems that we have is that the homeless youth problem is so large that they are not always connected with any kind of official program. And they're just out there trying to survive on their own.
Representative Petersburg.
Yeah, thank you. I won't labor the point, but it seems to me that that's another issue that ought to be worked on is how come that they're falling through the cracks early on, because obviously dealing with it early on is always cheaper than and more effective than trying to deal with it after it becomes a chronic situation. So I'll just leave it at that and just pointing out the fact that I'm surprised that people are falling through the cracks this way. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Petersburg. Next is Representative Ryer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Fisher, for bringing this bill forward. I want to just speak briefly in support of it, in support of House File 162. From my point of view, there are a lot of practical benefits. We have the ability to help youth build a future, get to school, get a job, get the support and help they need. And this is just one of those fundamentals. We all know what it's like when we lose our wallets or our purse and how disorienting it is to not have access to those fundamental documents and how much harder would it be without the ability to even acquire them. So there's that practical benefit that has social value not just for the person involved, but for broader society as a whole, to Representative Petersburg's point about addressing problems early on. This is a very useful tool. The other part that I just want to speak to is the compassionate benefit of this in terms of it reflecting who we talk about being as a society, looking out for our youngest, looking out for the vulnerable people amongst us in, again, a very practical way, but in a way that removes barriers, brings a preventive approach. There still will be barriers. As Representative Fisher said, there's a huge trust barrier where the systems that should protect them, they're afraid of them because they've seen them not work for that, for maybe their siblings or their friends or for others. So building that trust barrier, the least we can do is take out the practical barriers. So I thank you again for this bill.
Thank you, Representative Ryer. I see Representative Hornstein's hand is up. I'm not sure if this was to comment on the earlier
question. No, it's related, Madam Chair, but just
quickly.
First of all, Representative Fisher, thank you. I am in very strong support of this. It is needed. And, we deal, as Chair Gomez pointed out, with a variety of different ID-related issues that come under the jurisdiction of the Transportation Committee, as we have this part of the Department of Public Safety. It's Driver and Vehicle Services, so we have jurisdiction over their budget. So, I did want to add, I had read the part of the bill that talked about birth certificates, but yes, and you're absolutely correct, Madam Chair, that in Section 7, starting at 6.23, there is an appropriation for the Department of Public Safety. So, as we move forward, Representative Fisher, I'll want to continue to have conversations with you. You know, Representative Petersburg is on this committee. He's also the lead, the ranking member of transportation. So we'll continue to have conversations about, how this impacts the DVS budget. You know, this is general fund, so that's helpful. And we'll be getting into targets and that conversation next month. And it is, again, something that I strongly support and, want to continue the conversation with Driver and Vehicle Services, about this particular provision.
Thank you, Representative Hornstein. Members, is there any other comments or questions that we want to get out on this bill? Seeing none. Representative Fisher, did you have any closing comments?
Thank you, Representative Gomez, Chair Gomez, for the opportunity to present the bill to the committee. I appreciate the input. I will be reaching out to Representative Hornstein so I can make sure we touch base and close the loop on the public safety side of things on it. But I appreciate the consideration. I appreciate the input that we're getting here. I want to make sure we've got a great bill to help out youth who've got many barriers, and this is one of the really important barriers that we can start peeling away to allow them to be more successful in their lives going forward. Thank you for your support.
Thank you so much, Representative Fisher, for your work on this issue. So hearing no further discussion, I'm going to renew my motion that House File 162 be referred back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Mr. Petrie will take the role.
Gomez.
Aye.
Keeler.
Aye.
New Brindley.
Aye.
New Brindley, aye. Davids.
Davids, aye.
Davids, aye. Heinrich.
Heinrich, aye.
Heinrich, aye. Hollins.
Hollins, aye.
Hollins, aye. Hornstein.
Hornstein, aye.
Hornstein, aye. Howard.
Howard, aye.
Howard, aye. Cagle.
Aye.
Cagle, aye. Petersburg.
Petersburg, aye.
Petersburg, aye. Ryer.
Ryer, aye.
Ryer, aye. There are 11 ayes and 0 nays.
There being 11 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and House File 162 is on its way back to the Human Services Finance and Policy Committee. Our next meeting will be Wednesday, February 17th, 2021. And just briefly before we adjourn, because we have a couple minutes, I'm going to ask for your indulgence. I just wanted to say to how thankful I am for to Representative Neuer and Representative Fisher for bringing these forward, but it also just feels good for us to do work together as a committee that we can all agree on. And, you know, I think that there are, you know, as I think we've all kind of been saying, is that there are a lot of places within this work that we can find common ground, and this is one of them. Because we, you know, we all know and agree, and we've talked about the cost of what happens when we don't intervene, and we don't, you know, as Representative Petersburg said, when we don't get in upstream, that, you know, folks who experience homelessness a lot of times don't, you know, if there isn't an intervention, that remains something that they deal with their whole lives. And the financial cost and the human cost of that is too high for us to accept. And so I'm just really thankful that we could come together on this issue. And, you know, one thing that was clear to me in this discussion today is that, you know, there's the need for us, you know, maybe after our policy deadline, to dig in more to youth homelessness, because this is sort of one of those places that you know, as Representative New Brindley has talked about, where it's like kind of a place where concentrating some effort, concentrating some intervention can really make a difference. So my sincere thank you to all the members of the committee today for this. And with that, we are adjourned.